Welcome to another episode of React Native Radio Podcast. Brought to you by Waffles. Because what better way to start your day than a carb-loaded punch straight to your midsection? Episode 270, diving into React Native 0.72 with Lorenzo Chandra and Ricardo Cipolletti.
So, Robin, any chance you have like 4 or 5 grand laying around for the new Apple glasses or whatever they're called?
Apple Vision Pro. I think I'm going to skip this version, but I'm pretty sure someone on our team around here is probably going to go buy some, and I'm very excited to see what they're like.
Yeah, it was interesting to see it happen. They spent a lot of time on the video part of it and demoing it and the dev kit part, which was interesting. So I usually look out for the iOS versions because those are the ones that are like more fun to me.
Yeah, the iOS updates were pretty cool. Of course, we're talking about WWDC, the keynote, which I'm sure all of you listen to. Around here, it's practically required watching.
We like stop what we're doing and huddle and listen to it.
It's true, though. We all get in a room and watch it. But Vision Pro, lots of message updates, a triple guitar.
Who knows who came up with that idea? Do our guests, who I'll introduce shortly, do either of you have any opinions of how that went?
So, about the triple guitar, I'm going to put on my team for that. Like, I'm really deep into post-production and stuff, and I think there was some CGI involved in that. Like, it didn't feel as heavy as it should be. I don't know about that. But no, overall, I watched it almost all. But yeah, I had a meeting. Sadly, we don't have that policy in here.
I enjoyed the keynote overall. Of course, I'm an iOS engineer, so my heart is on the Apple side for a bit. But there is one thing that didn't digest really that much, because they claim to be the first one doing like the Vision Pro or doing revolutionize the augmented reality space, which is a lie. It's at least a couple of years that Meta is doing that. So
that's pretty classic Apple.
Yeah, they've done that a couple times, I feel like.
They're like, we're the first. No, definitely not
Android
the first.
Did
one,
that.
Like, who can forget the original Google Glass?
Yeah.
What was that, like 20 years ago now?
Something like that.
We all know how that went.
Android has had a bunch of stuff that iOS eventually comes out with. It's like revolutionary, but it's like Samsung or Android has had that for 10 years, has it been?
But it was entertaining, to say the least. I am excited about some of the message features, and FaceTime voicemails are actually one of my favorite features from the release, because we FaceTime grandparents a lot and they don't pick up, and it'd be fun to be able to leave messages.
Well, thanks to you, Robin, I downloaded the beta. So probably
yes,
after this.
Yes, if you're part of the Apple developer program, which all of you should be if you're React Native engineers. You can download the beta release if you just go into your software update tab.
Yeah, I just hope that it didn't break anything.
Yeah.
Like iOS 17 and Xcode 15, like every year, like the first day of beta, someone opens an issue in the React Native repo and just say, it doesn't work with this.
Like, you're like,
it's
of course
been 24
it doesn't.
Hours.
Give us a minute, please.
Xcode That's hasn't funny. Finished downloading yet.
Has it happened yet? Do you have any issues yet?
I didn't want to check, to be honest.
I don't
want to know.
I downloaded that, but I haven't had the time to try it out today, but I will do so tomorrow.
Cool. As you may have noticed, I'm not Jamin. Jim's on a plane currently returning from Render, Atlanta. I'm Mazen. I live in Durham, North Carolina, with my wife and baby boy. I'm a former pro soccer player and coach, and a senior React Native engineer here at Infinite Red. I'm joined by my outstanding co-host, Robin, and our two very special guests, who I'll introduce in a minute. Robin is a lead engineer here at Infinite Red. She's located west of Portland, Oregon, with her husband and two kids, and has specialized in React Native for the past 5 years. Lorenzo Chandra, who you probably know as Kelset, is a senior software engineer at Microsoft and has been a maintainer of React Native since 2018, version 57.4.
That's a long time.
That's a long time. And he lives in London, UK. Our other guest, Ricardo Cipolletti, is a software engineer at Meta with a primary focus on iOS. Prior to that, he was an iOS engineer at Bending Spoons, and he lives in London as well.
We are super excited to have you guys on. I think this is our first time having people from the React Native release team to talk about a release before, and we're super excited.
And hopefully we can keep this going because there's a lot of content that we want to cover, and hopefully we can get through all of it here today.
Yeah, we're going to try not to read the changelog line by line, but we want to hit the exciting bullet points. Yeah.
All of those 1,000 lines.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, this episode is sponsored by Infinite Red. Infinite Red is a premier React Native design and development agency fully located remote in the US and Canada. If you're looking for React Native expertise for your next React Native project, hit us up at infinite.red/React Native. Don't forget to mention that you heard about us through the React Native Radio podcast.
I like the forward slash. It made me feel like I was in like 1995 and they were reading out URLs like http://.
Should have done that. Well, HTTPS.
Oh, yeah. Right? Well, they didn't have S back then, did they?
Okay, let's get into our topic for today. Diving into React Native 0.72 with Lorenzo and Ricardo. Before we dive into the topic specifically, I'd like to hear from you guys. A lot of the listeners and developers out there probably have seen your avatars out there. You've closed their issues. I'm kidding. Or helped merge their PRs out there. Can you tell us a little bit about yourselves and how you got to where you are now?
Sure. Hi, everyone. I'm super happy to be back here. I think last time I was here, it was like super long time ago. So
I think it was probably before we took over the podcast, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it's been so long. But yeah, hi, everyone. I'm Lorenzo. And yeah, I'm super happy to be here with you all today to share a bit about myself. I started doing React Native when I was in Italy. Right after university, I was working for a small consultancy, and all of a sudden we had a client with a project that involved both a full stack backend, but also a front-end mobile. And they said, how about you try and find something that works cross-platform? And I was about to go with Xamarin. Mm-hmm. And luckily in the meeting where I presented my idea, someone very senior from the company said, how about React Native? And I was like, I'd never heard of that. And from that moment onward, it's basically been the thing that dragged me in more and more and more into itself. And I've been, growing ever since, moving to London, changing from startups into consultancy, now at Microsoft. And now I'm basically, my full-time role is pretty much doing whatever is needed for React Native to be better. So, it also involves being part of the release crew and helping making sure that the new releases are good and stable.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
So about me, I used to work in Italy for a company called Bending Spoons when I did 6 years of only iOS development, nothing more than that. And moving to London, working for Meta, I wanted to expand a little bit my knowledge as a software engineer. And I found in React, in the React.org and React Native specifically, like the best fit. Because as everyone knows, it's not just iOS, but there are plenty of other technology involved. And I really like the idea of working with different technology at the same time. I'm working with a team which is specifically heavily involved in the open source. And part of our responsibility is doing releases. It's a very fulfilling kind of task to release a new version of React Native and to interact with the community. So that's how I got here.
That's awesome. Before we actually get into 72, I'd also like to hear just a sort of a TLDR about what goes into a release or a release cycle. You're constantly doing work on React Native, but where do you decide like, okay, this is where we're going to draw the line and do a release? What sort of phases does it go through before we as developers get to install it?
So that's a great question, to be honest. And the answer has not been the same throughout all the years I've been a releaser. We actually now are in a place where I'm honestly excited by how we do releases. And it all starts with the release crew. The release crew is composed of 2 people from the Meta team and 2 people from the community. And these 4 people, once they get the baton from the previous release crew, that's when like everything kicks off for a new minor, in this case, 72. So for example, in this specific scenario, what happened is that me, Ricardo, Marek from Shopify, and Luna, again from Meta, we got the role, the responsibility, and now we are the people responsible for all the releases for all the miners that are part of the release support window, which means working on 72, but also working on 71, the current latest, and 70 and 69. Mm-hmm. Once the crew kind of gets in formally in place, that's when they get basically the driving wheel. So it's up to them to define a good point for the cut. That usually means communicating internally with Meta and defining, okay, do we have all the features that we want and that we need? Is the branch, is the main branch in shape, ready for providing, you know, a good commit for a branch cut? And then at that point, once we fully define, okay, it's going to happen on this day, at this point, that, so basically that means we get a green light from Meta. At that point, we create a branch and then we start the RC process. During the RC process, that's when we try, with the help of the community, to figure out all the problems and all the things that weren't detected while the code was only on main. So we do these release candidates, basically, mm-hmm. and we ask the community, the library maintainers, to try them out. That's where, like, we figure out and find all the main bugs. We address them. We do new RCs. And then once we feel confident that we're good to go, we do what is called a golden release candidate. In this case, for 72, we were hoping that 72 point, the RC3 was going to be the golden one. Then, of course, as it always happens, when you actually say, okay, this is the golden one, a bunch more people try it out, things break, and then you need to do follow-ups.
So it's for not example, really now, golden, it's like bronze.
And yeah, like, well, I mean, in retrospect, but no, like, we want to be optimistic, you know, like, we're yes. like, no, this
well,
is
you have
good.
To call it golden so that people will try it.
Exactly, and get exactly, the, yeah. exactly. Yeah, but let's not tell anyone about this. It's going to be our little secret. But no, once we get to the point where we do the golden, people actually test it, things break, we fix those. At that point, we give a grace period of, like, usually it's 1 or 2 weeks. For, like, the proper latest RC to kind of sediment and, like, people to do some more testing and report if the problems that they have surfaced are fixed. And then that's when we say, okay, now this RC, no one has been reporting new issues. Let's find the date that works for the release crew and let's aim to do 0.0 at the first available time. So in this scenario, our original, like, deadline when we said RC3 is the golden, I think 72.0 was planned to be like the last week of May, like basically right after a chain react, then a few more issues bubbled up. So right now, well, at the time of the podcast being out and everyone listening, it means that we finally reached that day. And if fingers crossed everything goes well, this means that it's around between the 15th and 20th of June. So that's pretty much what it goes into. So there are 4 people constantly working on them, getting all the feedback from the community, trying to figure out how to fix the problems, and then producing the new releases so that we can get this feedback loop constantly going to the point where we're like, okay, the signal is good. We feel confident in getting to 0.0.
That's really interesting. Do the 4 of you on the release, like, crew, is this like your full-time job, or are you doing this on top of what you normally do at Microsoft?
It's, I think we, like, when we make people sign their souls into being part of the release crew, we ask them to account at least 4 hours a week for doing release crew work. It's actually a bit more than that usually, if something goes wrong or we need to backport certain fixes to all the releases. But in general, it's not the only thing you do during your time in the release crew, also because, especially for us in the community, our companies may not see as much value in, like, okay, I'm losing an engineer for an entire 2 months. So it's usually like a balancing act, and that's why we have 4 people. Like, probably, like, for the longest time, it was like me and Mike Grabowski, so like even 1 or 2 people. But with having 4, you can kind of like, at least 2 people can always be around. So it's a balancing act, basically. But yeah, I think 4 hours a week on average, that's probably still a good estimate.
And you said it like you rely a lot on people in the community and library maintainers testing these RCs to sort of progress the release and polish it. Do you have a direct channel to these folks where, like, you can ask them to test certain things or give them a heads up, like, this particular thing changed, can you test it? How do you ensure that it's been tested thoroughly enough?
Another great question. it's an exercise of trust in a way. What we try to do is communicate as much like to the general public as possible. So like in the GitHub release, for the pre-release, we always say, please test it. Here's the link. Here's how you have to do it. This is where you report back. But also, for example, in some of the open source projects that we as Microsoft own, we have CI that tests against nightlies, and we also test against DRCs. So that's the first like direct way of testing that at least the baseline works. And on top of that, especially for some key library maintainers, we have some direct communication channels where we say, hey, library maintainers, please test it. Yeah. And usually that helps a lot, especially towards the starting part of like the RC phase, because that's when library maintainers like are most likely going to hit some problems and we then need to fix or address.
Right.
So yeah, usually we try to get the library maintainers, especially for like big libraries like Reanimated.
I would say like React Navigation, Reanimated, like the ones that most of us have installed, you really want to make sure they're solid.
Yeah, we try to get them to test early and then like to also test when we think it's good to go. And in this scenario specifically, like there were a couple of things that now the libraries need to fix on their end. So yeah, that's work. It's like a constant back and forth to really try and make sure that at least like when a new release comes out, people can upgrade because the libraries are already caught up, at least the main ones.
Yeah, I really like that because it's really closing the loop in on there having to be a lag. So let's say you release 72, then as a library maintainer, then I need to now come in, digest everything, test it, make up necessary updates, and then cut a new release. So not only is there the lag of the update, there's also the lag of your packages. So you guys working side by side with them, I think is an amazing thing for the community in general.
Right.
And if you are a library maintainer on the community, I'm sure, you know, they could also give some feedback too, even if they're not part of this, you know, group or whatnot. Their feedback is also valuable because they might have a subset that, you know, you might not be targeting specifically in your testing, but they get to find out early and then kind of help prevent any issues down the line, especially. So I really like that.
I mean, it's really mutually beneficial too, because like if React Navigation isn't working with 72, people aren't going to upgrade to 72 until it is. And so the sooner you can get support from both sides, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to be clear, that's also like why the first place where we look for feedback is the discussion, because those are open and any library maintainer can, you know, submit their feedback and everything. And also, this is a small like teaser. It's not, we are going to publish an RFC soonish over the next couple of months. Basically, we want to try to make the communication toward the library maintainers better and like also provide them similarly to what we have, like the upgrade helper that kind of gives you, you know, a diff of like the changes you need to do in your app. We want to have something similar for library maintainers. Like we want to have some more guidelines and also like diffs for library maintainers, but it's still like in the works, but we are in the very, let's say, experimental phase of like trying to figure out how to do it. But over the next couple of months, an RFC should come out, which will have a detail of like, okay, library maintainers, we're going to try to make life easier for you all through these tools and automations.
That's awesome. I mean, I know the upgrade helper completely like changed my upgrade experience personally. So,
oh yeah, me too. Yeah.
I'm sure whatever you come up with will be awesome. Let's actually talk about the meat of 72. It seems like the sort of headliners coming out of it are some Metro improvements, including sim linking, which I know we and a lot of people have been asking for sim linking support in Metro for a long time. Can you talk a bit about the Metro updates that are coming through, what symlink support is, why it's a big deal? And then maybe we can touch on a couple of the other Metro updates.
Okay, yes. So Metro Symlink was the number one issue in the Metro open source repository. So it's something that really requested by the community. I got some notes from the developer experience team in Meta because it's not directly my area of expertise. So I hope I'm not going to say silly things. But basically, to understand what symlinks are and why it's such an important thing, we need to talk a little bit about what Metro does. I'm sure that most of the audience know that already, but for the people that are approaching the framework for the first time, Metro is basically the thing that package all the JavaScript files in your bundle, in your app, React Native app, and provides those files to like the app itself. So it's the thing that packages all the JavaScript files and allow the native site to interpret them and render your views and like run your JavaScript logic. To do that, before 72, Metro needed all the proper path, let's say, to the each actual file inside your application and eventually your node modules inside your libraries. Something that does not really work very well in some more advanced scenarios like monorepos or stuff where node modules are not really like on the same structure, but they have these symlinks, which is basically a folder which says that it contains a files, but the files is not really in that particular location on disk, but there is actually a link to another location on your disk saying that actually the file is there. So Metro was not able...
It's like a shortcut.
Yeah, Metro was not able to follow this shortcut to the real path of the file. And like solving this issue allows for these more advanced kind of scenarios where the file is not really there, but you have a link to a file and Metro can now follow it. I have also some more low-level details that the team shared with me about why it was so difficult to pull it out in the first place and we have to wait so much time, but I don't know how much in the technical details we can go. So
I know there's a really fantastic talk by Alex Hunt, which he gave at AppJS Conf, which we'll put in the show notes, and that I think goes into a lot more detail about the Metro changes.
Yeah, Alex gave this talk. There are not a lot of details specifically on symlinks on the technical side on the talk, but there is a lot of good content on other features we are going to talk about in a few minutes.
I know personally we ran into this issue. Oh gosh, it was probably three years ago now. Where we had a web and mobile monorepo and we wanted to symlink like shared code. And what we ended up doing was basically keeping everything within the React Native app and then the web app, so like symlinked into the React Native app so that as far as Metro was concerned, they were all real files. And that was how we got around that. But like symlinking in Metro has been something that people have been talking about for a long time, and it's really nice to see it finally land. There was a couple other Metro changes, including package exports, which I think is primarily a feature that package maintainers will care about. I don't know a ton about package exports because I don't make packages. Yeah. But
so again, the team shares some notes with me, so I can try to shed some light here. Basically, as far as I understood, before this change, not all the package available on NPM could be used inside React Native because they were not compatible with how React Native handled packages, basically. With this change increased the compatibility of React Native with all these JavaScript packages, which were using those features that were not supported by Metro. Keep it simple. So now... we can use packages that were only working with Node or Webpack, for example, and now can work without changes also in React Native.
Cool.
One thing that the team highlighted, and I need to like stress a little bit here, is that all these features are kind of in a beta experimental stage. So it's really important that everyone that is interested in using them try them out and report if something is not working so that we can address them. Like address those issues and improve the experience for everyone.
Definitely. I think that's going to be pretty clear in the announcement that they're beta features, but test them out, report back, and it's still very exciting to see them. So yeah, the TLDR with the Metro improvements is go watch Alex Hunt's talk. And it seems like in general, there's a big focus on developer experience improvements. And I think that applies in some other areas as well. Mazen, I don't know if you want to go into the other developer experience improvements that were in the release.
Yeah, developer experience is something that I'm always, you know, stressing to our clients that, hey, this is something that React Native is going to bring a lot of developer experience to the table to help make your lives easier. And, you know, we leverage other things like TypeScript and ESLint and all that kind of stuff just to make things very simple. Now, I will say the one thing on here that I kind of want to touch on probably first, even though it's potentially subtle, but now that you don't see that undefined is not a function, that red box, that very random and vague red box, you know, now it says X is not a function, you know, it's undefined and you get pointed towards it.
It's such a subtle change and it's so impactful.
Yeah. I feel like it's huge. Robin, you said it's so subtle, but at the same time, it's going to help all the developers out there debugging and kind of get to the solution quicker. Another one that I saw in here was the invalid style properties no longer shows a red box. That might just seem, you know, trivial, but
that's kind of the
then,
opposite effect. It's like, yeah. it's not interfering with your workflow so much for errors that really don't break the app. Mm-hmm. Like it'll tell you, but it's not like preventing you from continuing.
Yeah. So most of these are just kind of removing stuff that's not relevant or like slowing you down, and then giving you tools to kind of speed things up, you know, other things like filtering out bytecode that isn't relevant for Hermes errors. I feel like, you know, for the main developer up front, that really necessarily doesn't really matter. That's all under the hood related stuff. React Native CLI error output improvements. Hey, we could all, you know, use that help to be able to debug our issues that kind of come out there.
It's like not showing you stuff that doesn't help you. And when you do need help, showing you stuff that's more helpful.
And I know, Ricardo, you had a point on the whole developer experience in general, right?
Yeah. Referring again to the Alex Hunt video and talk at App.js, Matt is doubling down a little bit on the developer experience for React Native. The team has grown last year. And yeah, we are very invested in trying to improve the debugging experience of React Native, especially from the web perspective, and try to make it easier to work with our framework. We use a lot also the input from the community, and we are collaborating with some partners to try and improve like the whole stack trace situation, for example. So yeah, we really care about the developer experience, upgrade experience, and we're trying to make it better for everyone.
And we do see that, and we do feel that as developers, like there's a lot of stuff that's come a long way, and it's just making our experience at the keyboard that much simpler.
Yeah, and I mean, also from the perspective of like one of these partners being Microsoft, like the developer experience is paramount for us. Like we really need to be able to, you know, have hundreds, if not thousands of engineers being able to use React Native and deliver quickly. So the developer experience is very, very important, especially because internally, sometimes, you know, we need to compare React Native to other technologies. And so having a good developer experience is very important. And we're happy also that most of these conversations, or at least a good portion of them, are happening in the open. There's a dedicated working group, like similarly to the new architecture one and some others, that is dedicated to the developer experience. It's under the React Native Community org. So if you want to check out like some of the discussions that are happening between these partners, you can find the notes of the agenda of the meetings in there.
There was at Chain React, there was a talk by, I think it was Kadi, about building a 5-star app. And this reminds me of that because it's like, you can build all the cool features in the world, but if a developer has a bad experience when they have an error, like that's all that they're going to remember. So the more you can improve that, like minimize that negative experience, that's going to be more impactful than like cool, shiny new features ultimately.
Yeah. Lorenzo, you were joking about people opening an issue at the first day of a release. This is another scenario where if a developer has a... Exactly. You're not going on there to give a positive review most of the time for the restaurant, right? You're usually going on there to complain about hair in your food.
Do you ever get issues where people are just like, I just opened this because I want to say how awesome you guys are?
No, I've seen, you know, like sometimes there is that... like month of maintainers where like maintainers are celebrated, and I see like some of these smaller, more open source centered communities having all these screenshots of like good things, and I'm like crying in the corner. And by the way, this doesn't mean that now you need to coming to the Ragnative issues and open. Like, we're trying to get the countdown, so it's
don't,
okay.
Don't open issues like just work. To say thank you.
It's okay.
Maybe just tweet like about it once in a while.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about another pretty significant part of the release, which is the mitigation for the Android text input ANRs, which stands for application not responding or application not responsive. This seems like a pretty big deal, partly because you guys are doing backported releases, which I don't. Have you guys ever done backported releases before?
All the time.
So just like a quick summary. There's an issue around multi-line text inputs on specifically Samsung devices with Grammarly enabled, I think. So it's a really specific situation, but I mean, there's lots of Samsung users out there. And so it was actually impacting quite a lot of people. But how did this issue get discovered? How did you find out the root cause? And then how did you decide that you needed to backport to older releases?
Yeah, I think that this problem specifically has been like ever a true test of like all the processes and all the work that we've done over the last couple of years in like how to handle releases, how to handle problems from the community. Because this was originally a problem reported from the community. We didn't pick it up at Microsoft. We didn't pick it up at Meta. And to be even more specific, it was only on Samsung devices with Android 13, with a very specific version of the Samsung OS. It was like, how do you even realize that that's where it comes from? But like, of course you have crash reporting that literally tells you it's this very specific series of things. But like, it was so complicated to figure out even what was going on. And that's why like also... Yes, 72 is going to be the first version to kind of have it out of the box. For everything else, we had to add it as a patch release. The problem there was that because it was so specific and it required basically to have a physical device with that, until we had a proper like repro, like until someone from the community opened the proper issue with an actual repro that was like properly reproducible, like you could take that code, go into a Samsung device and try it out, it was very, very hard to understand what was actually going wrong. But once we got that, Meta was able to provide an engineer to kind of like work on that full time. It was also very hard to like properly fix. We had to do two full rounds of patch releases. The first one wasn't good enough in a way. So it was very intense and took a very long time to fully address. So first off, a shout out to Nick Gerleman, which is like the engineer from Meta that did the work. And also the way we decided to do the patch basically was a matter of like looking at the data. We have a website called rn-version.github.io or something like that. We can put it in the show notes. But basically on that, you can see that the daily tracking of like all the downloads on NPM and like how they're split between versions. And with that tool, which funny enough, it was also made by the same guy, Nick Gerleman. We were able to decide, okay, what's the baseline? What do we define as a version that we need to backport this to, or what doesn't, you know, is not tall enough to hop on the ride? I think that what we ended up doing, especially for the first round, was commit to 68, because back then, when we first decided the first round of patches, it was still like around 10 or 15% even. Now, luckily, the numbers are much more like 71 heavy. Like 71 has surpassed the 50% mark in terms of like market share.
Yeah.
So I don't think we would go out of the release window, which again is 71, 70, and 69 currently. But in general, like we were trying to at least fix it for the majority of the developers. I think we were aiming at 90% of the user base or something like that. So that's where like we try to use the data. We're like, okay, these many versions we can do, also because it became a practical problem. So do we even have the ability to still test those older versions and ensure that that fix doesn't break more stuff than it actually addresses? Yeah, so it was a very hard balancing out of like, okay, how confident are we in doing this patch versus how many people will this affect? But in the end, I think that we were able also to, you know, to provide it to enough people that once the full fix was out, as it usually happens for issues that are fixed, No one wrote a comment.
You didn't hear like, anything.
That's when you know. Exactly. That's when you know that something is fixed.
Silence.
When you post a comment saying, hey, we've done this release. Can you tell us if it's working? And no
replies. No news is good news.
Correct. Exactly. Yeah.
Was that the kind of thing that would bump you and your release crew over 4 hours a week to try and manage?
Definitely. When those kind of things happens, especially when they are of this like magnitude, people jumps in. The team in Meta is also like the team in the React org team that take care of working on React Native is also very responsive and very like willing to help. As Lorenzo was saying, Nick is not part of the release crew, but it was like a key player in fixing this problem together also with Nicola Corti, which helped as well. They both like jump in the problem, helping out us that we don't have a huge Android experience in this case while they have. So that's a great thing. With very good vibe of the team internally. But yeah, definitely for them, it took a few days of work to manage to find the fix. And that's, these are the events that increase the number of hours that are required for a release. And nobody can really like account for them when it starts.
These number of patches actually like put the average of like releases that we've done in 2023, at least as of last week, like to one per week as average, which is like crazy. Like we've done so many releases
like
this
four
year.
At the same time.
Yeah, because we had to do so many backports to so many different minors. So yeah, basically anytime there was a new fix, we had to at least account for four releases.
Yeah.
And that means cherry picking, testing, releasing, cherry picking, testing, releasing. And that means also producing the change logs, producing the GitHub release notes. So there's a lot, not a lot, but there's always also a bit of overhead of like the communication part of it that when you do so many, like kind of adds up. So yeah, definitely those weeks were a bit higher than the 4 hours.
Well, we appreciate it for sure. I know we have a couple of our really large projects are still on 68, I think.
Why would you throw them under the bus, Rob?
I will not name any names, and it's not for lack of trying. It's just a very difficult version to get past because of new architecture additions. And so they're kind of like stuck on 68 for a while. So I'm sure they appreciate it.
Project I just kicked off, we're on 71. So and I'm going to do 72. I have a branch for 72 going.
Nice.
Cool. The next section I kind of want to talk about, well, the first part of it is the breaking changes part. And I think I want to bring a section of this to the top first. And this has to do with the package renames. So essentially, we're turning React Native into a proper monorepo. And, you know, if you weren't at Chain React, so you probably didn't hear Lorenzo's talk.
It's online now, though. We'll put it in the show notes.
It is. So hopefully everyone's listened to it. I'm sure people would have listened to it before this. So I guess the main point for the listeners is if you know, check out the link that we're going to put in the show notes. If you're using any of these specific packages as a direct dependency, you have some breaking changes, so you kind of need to make some updates. Everything now lives under the React-Native/// packages. So it's all housed there now.
Like React Native itself specifically. Like it used to be like React Native itself was sort of at the top, and then the adjacent packages were nested underneath in the packages directory, which sounded like it got really complicated.
Yeah, I feel like they were scattered. Now everything's kind of being brought home and kind of organized better. So I guess for those who weren't fortunate to see your talk, Lorenzo, in person, or haven't listened to the talk yet, can you give a summary on what these improvements are and like from your perspective, like why this was necessary to do?
Absolutely. And also, it's great to hear you try to remember my talk because you got so many things right. I was like, yes!
It was a really good talk.
It was.
Thank you. You're very kind. But yeah, okay. So let's make it easy and understandable for people. So when you went into GitHub and opened the React Native repository, you would basically see the shape of a standard library. So you would see all the different files, all the different folders. And then there was also a packages folder, and that packages folder was a monorepo. So at the same time, the repository was the node module of React Native and a monorepo. And that is very, very non-standard, and you should not try this at home. So please don't do it. It will just create a lot of pain for you. This also means that doing releases, for example, meant that whenever we were cutting a branch, we would actually kind of like configuration-wide yeet out the monorepo side so that only the node module part, the actual React Native stuff, would end up in the node module. So as you can imagine, this wasn't ideal. That also meant that to do the releases for the sub packages, it was very convoluted and it was usually manual only. And so only someone from Meta had the right level of authorization to do a new release for those packages. But some of those packages were also like on versions that were completely random. Like I think one of the packages was on 3.2.1. It's like, how do you even know which version of React Native can use that package? It's like pure madness. So what we did last year, like almost, it's been over a year now. We sat down and we were like, okay, this needs to change. We worked on an RFC. We created a graph where we were showing the entire mapping of like, okay, there's React Native and these are all the packages. These are all the versions. These are all the names. We're like, okay, this needs to change and let's put it in a proper monorepo. So let's put everything. So also the React Native stuff under the packages folder and let's rename everything to be consistent and let's reversion everything so that everything is on the same versioning scheme as React Native itself. So now if you're using React Native 72 and you're using React Native Gradle plugin, that version of React Native Gradle plugin will follow Semver, so it will be 0.72 something. So you know which version matches which version of React Native.
Yeah.
To be clear though, we haven't ported back in any packages, like we've only reshuffled and cleaned up the room of what was already there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just wanted to add and call out a couple of things. Like this monorepo, huge effort, was started by Lorenzo, which drafted the initial RFC.
There was a really cool graph involved, which we will link in the show notes because it is epic.
It was kickstarted by the community, actually, during the React Native EU last year in Wroclaw. I hope I pronounced that correctly because the name I don't know how to pronounce. And like they started working on like moving the packages from like giving the right names and refactoring the package.json file. And then one of my colleagues, Ruslan, drove it to conclusion by the end of last year. So it was a huge community effort, which had to end up in our field at Meta because of internal stuff, which are using React Native. So we had to make sure that everything was working. But like huge shout out to everyone involved because it was a huge effort and makes the life of everyone easier.
Yeah, totally. And also to bring it back to where we want to be, like, it took so long, especially because there was so much work involved. And without Meta, this wasn't going to be doable. Like, we really needed Meta to buy into the idea and see the value in that. And 72 is going to be the first version post this change. So that's why, like, we were saying earlier, the breaking changes are going to be, like, mostly just renaming of packages. But it's very unlikely that you're using them directly. So just keep an eye on Upgrade Helper. You should see all the changes that you need to do, unless you're doing something particularly complicated, but in which case you're an advanced user, so you know how to deal with these things.
Yes, we're unfortunately running short on time, so I'll try and wrap things up, but I want to hit the rest of the breaking changes really quick because we usually like to give people a heads up. Minimum node version is now 16. The used version is 18, but the minimum version is 16, so if you're below that, you need to upgrade. Get item layout on Flatlist now has better typing. The arguments have better typing. So that might be a breaking change. And then a bunch of components were removed, like slider, date picker iOS, progress view iOS, which are now being shifted to community libraries, where like the support is being shifted to community libraries that most people are probably already using. I just wanted to note that I think it's a huge indicator of how strong the community support and infrastructure has become. That like things can be removed from React Native Core because there's a community supported option that is so widespread and well maintained that like there doesn't need to be a core version anymore, and that could be removed. I'm really proud of how solid the community is, especially in terms of libraries. Yeah, It's looking really good. That's I think that hits everything, unless if there's anything that we missed that you guys want to touch on, speak now, forever hold your peace.
Well, very quickly, just to plus one, what you were just saying about the community, this release is over 1,000 commits, it's 1,100, mm-hmm. which I think is one of the biggest that we've done in the recent memory. And it's also possible because of so many people from the community submitting PRs. So I just wanted to close it off with a shout out to all the people that submit PR, because even if it may take some time to get them in, we're improving the flows. So hopefully they get faster in, and thank you so much.
Yeah. On top of that, I said at Chain Reactor during my talk, so a little bit of shameful self-promotion here.
Not shameful at all.
You can find that on YouTube under on the Infinite Thread channel. We actually need the community to report all the use cases that we don't have internally at Meta or even at Microsoft, because there are so many ways to use React Native. We can't cover it all ourselves. So we really need your contribution to make the framework better for everyone. And yeah, there are many ways in which you can help out there. In my talk, I explained some of those, but we are opening some other umbrella issues. This morning, one of my colleagues opened an umbrella issue to convert part of the code base from Java to Kotlin. Mm-hmm. So if you're an Android engineer and you want to...
I was just going to say, just this morning, we had a thread in our Slack. Someone posted the tweet and we had 3-4 people saying, oh, I'm going to go grab one. I really want to learn more about... Yeah. Java and Kotlin syntax, and it's a really great opportunity to make a contribution. So I love seeing that. I love seeing people start to get more confident about sort of diving into something that was previously maybe sort of intimidating and scary, and now it's getting to be less so. Especially your talk was really fantastic, and
thank you.
One of our developers, Frank, actually said I listened to Ricardo's talk and now I'm already working on contributing. Yeah, really great to see.
It really helped inspire people that were there to want to help out, which is great, because it was kind of bringing all this together about version 72. There were 66 contributors and over 1,100 commits, like you said, Lorenzo. That's a lot. So, there's a lot that goes into every release, but at the end of the day, we said, these issues aren't open, but thank you and the team for all the effort that you put into every release, because it helps us out a lot. And yes, it's never a shameless plug when you mention your talk, Ricardo. So
see, no, it's shameless. It's definitely not shameful. No. We encourage it.
Yes. I encourage everyone to listen to Ricardo's talk, because
we'll put both talks from Chain React in the show notes.
Yeah. And that talk is very helpful if you feel inspired and want to help out, because there's so much more out there that I'm sure you guys would want to cover, and the help of everyone will definitely help us close that loop quicker. Well, if you'd like to nerd out more about React Native, check out Jamin's Twitch stream at rn.live, which I think he's planning on rebooting soon.
He's been taking an extended break. It's okay. He's tired.
You can also join our Slack community at community.infinite.red. We have almost 2,000 React Native developers in there. Also, check out the Twitter community, rntwitter.infinite.red. If you'd like to reach out to either one of us, I'm at Mazen Chami, Robin's at Robin_Hines, Lorenzo's at Kelset, Ricardo is at Cipolleschi R, and you can find React Native Radio at React Native RDIO. Thanks to our guests, Ricardo and Lorenzo. Thank you for joining us. This was nice to get to chat with you guys, and hopefully we can have you on more often.
Thank you for having us. It was great.
As always, thanks to our producer and editor, Todd Worth, our assistant editor and episode release coordinator, Judd Bartowski, our designer, Justin Husky, and our guest coordinator, Derek Greenberg. Thanks to our sponsor, Infinite Red. Check us out at infinite.red/React Native. Special thanks to all of you listening today. Make sure to subscribe. We are React Native Radio. Robin, do you have a mom joke to close us off?
I do. So this is courtesy of Carlin. He's one of our dad and mom joke captains over here at Infinite Red. But dogs can't operate MRI machines. I don't know if you knew that. But cats can.
Thank you, everybody.
And upgrade your React Native apps.
Listen to Lorenzo. Yes. All right.
Bye, everyone.